I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and this is Up to Date. It's election season, and everybody's got a point of view. This hour, we're broadcasting from the Plaza Branch of the Kansas City, Missouri Public Library with representatives of both major parties. Not only will veteran consultants Jeff Rowe and Roy Temple argue for their presidential and U.S. Senate picks, but we'll talk about where they stand on other ballot issues like an increase on cigarette taxes, healthcare exchanges, and electing judges. We're live from the Kansas City Library on the Plaza on Up to Date after this hour's news. And welcome to a special broadcast of Up to Date as we come to you live this morning from the Kansas City, Missouri Public Library on the Country Club Plaza. Today, a showdown between two of Missouri's premier political consultants, Jeff Rowe for the Republicans and Roy Temple for the Democrats. We'll ask Jeff and Roy to debate the merits of their candidates for president, for the U.S. Senate, and for governor. We'll also ask them what type of advice they would give to Barack Obama and Mitt Romney as they head down the stretch in this very close, very tense race for president. It's 1 week until Election Day, and there aren't two better people to give us insights into the big campaigns of 2012 in Missouri than Jeff Rowe and Roy Temple. Jeff Rowe is the founder and principal of Axiom Strategies, a Kansas City-based political consulting firm that runs campaigns all over the country. He's a former chief of staff to Missouri Congressman Sam Graves. Jeff, nice to have you.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
Roy Temple is a veteran political strategist and innovator in the use of digital media in advocacy efforts. He's a founder of a Democratic blog, Fired Up Missouri, and is a former chief of staff to Governor Mel Carnahan. Roy, good to have you, too.
Good to be with you.
Well, gentlemen, Mitt Romney and Barack Obama are locked in a too-close-to-call race for the White House. What do you imagine is going on inside these two campaigns this morning as the big hurricane is causing all kinds of havoc on the East Coast and this race hits its final week? Jeff?
Well, logistics are really down the stretch your biggest problem. So building crowds, making sure you have energy, making sure you're touching volunteers an appropriate way, making sure that your donors are being activated and that they don't give up but keep writing checks, and not making big mistakes. You have a map that's laid out for you. People will try and encourage you to expand the map or reduce the map. Your time with your candidates, when you bring in a presidential surrogate, in fact, this can work against you as well, as Jim Talent found out when he brought in George W. Bush. He even brought him into Joplin. But that was even a big mistake, even in 06. And so you can misappropriate your resources either by motivating the other side if you take them to the wrong media market or if you don't utilize them to the best. And I think what we're seeing right now is we see the Democrats playing a little bit of defense. They're Joe Biden's in Pennsylvania. They're going to Minnesota with Michelle Obama. So they're really playing a firewall map right now. And for the Republicans, they just got to make sure and deploy the right resources at the right place to keep on offense and shore up their support.
Roy, what's your sense of just how tense things are probably in both these campaigns this final week?
Well, there's not a lot to relax about if you're inside the nerve center of either of these campaigns. I think Jeff's right that a lot of this is about logistics. You've got your plans in place, and you better have a pretty compelling reason to adapt from that or to shift from that, figuring out those last-minute trips and where you're going to go to try and mobilize your support. You know, we're past the point where you're likely to be persuading anyone, and you're shifting into mobilizing your supporters to make sure they actually show up on Election Day.
Who's going to win? Jeff, we're a week out. What do you think?
I tell you, it would be not surprising to your listeners that Roy would think that Barack would win, and I would think that Mitt Romney would win. But I tell you,
you can always break the mold here.
I could break news, right. I didn't think that Mitt Romney – I thought Mitt Romney's chances were under 50% until about a week ago. And I think today – I don't have it in the bag for sure. But the path is very clear now. It was not clear before. And if I had to bet, I would bet that he would win. And it's really been a dynamic of the campaign tactics, which maybe is one of the reasons why you have us here. In my opinion, Mitt Romney has had a big game strategy all the way through. Big ideas, bold vision. That changed, by the way. They had a small ball mentality going into the Republican convention. Before the Republican convention, Mitt Romney said nothing about himself, said nothing except Barack Obama's made a mess, I can fix it. It was essentially a referendum on the incumbent. And that's why you should run against the incumbent. But they made a decision at the Republican convention that was strategic, and it was a shift change to make it a choice, to acknowledge that voters liked the president. They maybe weren't happy with his policies, but they were going to have to make this a choice. They were going to have to talk about their own plan. And the Obama campaign, on the other hand, I don't think they thought that they could lose this race forever. I think for the last 2 years, the map is too tough. Romney has to win everything. He has to do a clean sweep. And I think that they finally shifted out of that at about after the first debate. I think that strategy took them all the way through the first debate, which is why you saw them in a defensive posture. But now I think it's changed.
Now, Roy, Jeff Rowe just said he thinks Mitt Romney's going to win this thing. If you look at Nate Silver's blog today, the last couple of days, New York Times, a guy who sort of analyzes all the polls, compresses them, tries to figure out what's happening, he says there's a 3 in 4 chance that Barack Obama wins re-election. Where are you on this thing?
Well, I think Nate Silver's a pretty smart guy. And I think he's probably right. I don't know whether it's 3 in 4, but I think if you had to bet today, you'd bet that President Obama will be reelected. I guess I base that in part based on the fact that most of the past year there's been an extraordinarily weak candidate in Mitt Romney and an extraordinarily weak campaign. They fixed part of that in the first debate. Romney improved his performance in that debate and has been a stronger candidate since that time. But now we're to the part of the cycle where the strengths of the campaigns matters the most.
Yeah.
And I think the Obama operation is as impressive as any I've ever seen in my life in politics. And I don't think the Romney operation can match it in those places that are still competitive.
You know, there's a lot of talk, Roy Temple, about this vaunted get out the vote effort that Democrats are going to wage in part in Missouri through Senator McCaskill and then across the country on behalf of the president. Tell us about that. Is it as good as it's being cracked up to be?
Look, there was a couple of cycles in which there was a lot of discussion about the vaunted Republican 72-hour project and the impressiveness of their get-out-the-vote operation. There is no political operation in history that is more data-driven than the Obama operation. The downside is of the Obama team in terms of communication is that they're so analytic and sometimes don't tell their story very well. The upside of that mindset is at this exact point in the campaign, when it comes time to deliver your vote and see that it gets out on election day, that depth of analysis is an incredibly useful tool. And I think people are going to be pretty wowed by the operation they've got on the ground.
Jeff Rowe, are you buying that? Is the country going to be wowed by what we're seeing in terms of the get out the vote machine? And, you know, the early returns, the early findings seem to suggest that Barack Obama is winning, at least among those who are voting early. What do you say to all that?
Well, I think that, let me pop one balloon here today. I think that the get out the vote operations are typically overhyped and not as strong as they all suggest. Also in politics, when you win, you're a genius, and when you lose, you're an idiot. And so the winners are all geniuses and had this magnificent program, and the losers underperformed and kicked the can down the road. So I believe that motivation is important in presidential politics. I believe that get out the vote is important in state Senate races and congressional districts, orphan state U.S. Senate races where the presidential races aren't playing can be an important get out the vote technique. But let's break it down here. You knock on people's doors and you phone call them. I mean, that's what Abraham Lincoln did. It's not a real collection of ingenuity here. We knock on their doors and we call them on the phone until they stop answering. And that is increasingly every year they answer less and less. But I will say this, Barack Obama is underperforming with every single piece of his winning coalition. He's underperforming, and they're not as excited. And so I'm not convinced that they can have a great get out the vote operation when they suffer, and every demographic, they suffer from their 2008 levels, and they're less motivated. That tells me that their get out the vote probably isn't what it is. And I witnessed it myself on Broadway this last weekend. I went down to, I like to watch what my opponent does, and in 2008 I drove by there and I thought, this is it. The 10 days out, that's when all the get out the vote starts. You couldn't fit a sandwich in sideways in that place. And I was there this Saturday and there were three people looking at a map. It is a different environment for the Democrats this year.
Yeah, Roy, what about that? You know, Jeff does have a point. If you went to 31st and Gillum 4 years ago, that operation, Barack Obama's operation, was humming pretty much 24/7. And there's just almost none of that this year. Obviously, Obama not playing in Missouri. Neither is Mitt Romney. But what about that enthusiasm level, and where is it?
Well, I mean, you just answered your own question.
Yeah.
That if Jeff had driven by a headquarters in a state that's in play, you'd have seen a very different operation. There's no reason for them to be putting in resources into a get-out-the-vote operation in the state that they're not competing in. So that's disappointing for local supporters, but that's not a mark of a problem. That's the mark of an efficient, well-run campaign. You put your resources where you're trying to win.
Yeah. If you're just joining us this morning, you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. We're coming to you live this morning from the Kansas City, Missouri Public Library on the Plaza. We're visiting with two veteran political consultants in Missouri, Jeff Rowe and Roy Temple. You're welcome to join our conversation. We're not taking phone calls today, but you can email us. Our address is updatedate@kcur.org. You can also post on KCUR's Facebook page, or you can tweet us at KCUR Up to Date. And here in the library, at the Kansas City Public Library, you can join us by asking a question at one of our microphones here. Beth Lipoff will be taking your questions, and we'll be coming to our audience here in just a few minutes. What's the more amazing political feat this year, in your view, gentlemen, that President Obama is hanging in this race, even though the economy has been slow to recover? Or is it that Mitt Romney is on the brink of defeating an incumbent president who won with 53% support back in 2008, Roy Temple?
Well, I mean, I think that if you look at the sort of the structure of the race, it is surprising that Romney couldn't put this away. And I think that goes back to my earlier point. I think he was an incredibly inept candidate very early in this cycle. He's gotten better, but he should have been able to make the case. If he just should have been able to produce a better result than he's been able to get here, if you accept the version of reality that they're trying to present. The reality is the president and his campaign has actually been able to make the case that they inherited an extraordinary mess. They put us on the path to repairing the mistakes of the past, and the way to make continued progress is not to go back to the system that got us into the mess to begin with. That has actually been compelling to enough of the voters to keep the president in the game. So the fact that we're still in the fight at the end of this is a tribute to both the strength of their effort and the weakness of the opposition.
So why do you think, Roy, that the American people aren't more satisfied with the pace of progress when it comes to the economy? Why aren't people satisfied with where we're at right now?
Well, look, I mean, I think we tend to look at this through the prism of politics and candidates and all that stuff, but that's not how real people analyze this. Real people kind of sit there and go, are things the way I want them to be? What can I do about that? There is a very narrow range of options available to real voters, and if you have an incumbent, then the single most obvious thing you can do is do something else. And so I think that's kind of my thing about Missouri. I think voters pundits tend to impute motive to people that they don't necessarily have. Missouri swings so wildly because they nod loosely in a direction. Less of this, more of that. And then politicians tend to interpret that as some kind of broad mandate for every policy position that they put forth and overdo it. And then the next time the electorate goes, whoa, I didn't realize I was signing up for that. I want this instead.
Jeff, what's the more amazing thing to you? Is it that Mitt Romney's on the brink of defeating an incumbent president, or that Obama is hanging in this race even though the economy has been slow to recover?
Well, every president since George Washington has blamed, you know, the president before him for all of his ills. But the fact of the matter is that you have to run on your record as an incumbent. And I'm a little bit torn. When you look at the electoral map, the high water mark for Republicans in modern political history is George W. Bush reelect against Kerry. And the high water mark, which is 285 electoral votes. When the high water mark for Democrats modern era is Obama's win in 2008, which is 360 electoral votes. So the math, I mean, we're playing on, you know, we're playing on our own 50 side of the 50 yard line there. It is amazing to me. I can see a state like Indiana giving up it. I can see Missouri, which was really a coin toss state. He narrowly lost it, you know, 4,000 or so votes. But we have Mitt Romney. Let's take Missouri, since it's appropriate for our audience. Missouri essentially was a tie against John McCain. Barack Obama versus John McCain was essentially a tie. That means that Obama won by 7 points nationally, which meant that the Missouri was 7 points behind the national average for Obama. This year, in a poll that the Kansas City Star and several media outlets did, and our internal polling reflects that Mitt Romney is going to win this state by 14 points this year. But that might tighten, so let's just say it's plus 10. That tells you how much support he has lost. And it's a fundamental shift. I believe that the Republicans had won the presidency for a long time. A lot of local folks still vote locally Democrat, but for federal offices, they vote Republican. And I believe if he loses this election, the Democrats might be searching for a long time for a replacement candidate that can win nationally, because that is an epic proportional loss of vote share. We've never seen a candidate swept into office. So Jimmy Carter is the only Democrat ever to not be reelected in history. So Democrat presidents don't lose reelect. Being a Democrat is one of the best things you could ever be. You get to give everything away for free, promise everything, and just threaten to take it away every 4 years. It's a great place to be. And so to lose that, to give everything away, and then threaten that the other guy is going to take it back, to lose an election like that is really an epic fall.
Roy Temple, it wouldn't be like you not to respond to something like that, so I'm going to give you the floor here, sir.
Well, that is the world according to Jeff, that's for sure. It doesn't reflect much toward reality, but it's an interesting viewpoint nonetheless. Well, I think what Jeff gave you a bunch of numbers there, but the bottom line is what he's just demonstrated is it matters if you have a campaign or not. Romney is going to carry Missouri. He's going to carry Missouri by a fairly substantial margin, and that's what happens when you don't run a campaign. On the other side of that, you're going to have a governor reelected by a margin pretty close to whatever margin Romney's going to have. That's going to be a swing of, 300,000-400,000 votes. It's so it matters in a state like Missouri. This is to use an economic term, it's just a much more elastic electorate than in many, many states where they are locked into a partisan prism and nothing you say or do will cause voters to change their mind. Missouri voters are very adept at playing hopscotch. They jump around the ballot based on who they like in a particular race, and there's nothing to suggest that's about to change, other than the fact that at a presidential level, there are states that are getting more competitive, and you can compete there more cheaply. Part of the issue with Missouri is it's a difficult place politically to compete, but it's also an extraordinarily expensive place to compete, relatively speaking, because you waste so much of your resources in states that are not ever going to be competitive. Half the money you spend in Kansas City is wasted on Kansas voters whose minds you're never going to change, and half the money you spend in St. Louis is wasted on Illinois voters whose minds you're never going to change. So it's a very inefficient place to spend and compete in terms of political dollars.
Again, you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. We're coming to you live from the Kansas City, Missouri Public Library this morning. We're visiting with two of Missouri's best political consultants, Jeff Rowe and Roy Temple. So let's come sort of to the heart of the matter here today, gentlemen. Make a case for your candidate. Why is your guy the right guy for the country in 2013? Jeff Rowe, why don't you start with Mitt Romney?
Well, and I believe the converted are the truest believers. And I started out with Rick Perry, and that lasted for about 48 hours, and then I really like Santorum and Newt Gingrich, and so I ran the gamut. And I believe that what we need, and something I've learned since I've been a chief of staff and I started my own company, is I learned a little bit about what it takes to run a business, and that people that can provide income for people that work for them to provide for their families. And as a business owner, not necessarily as a political pundit, I believe we need certainty. And I believe that we need to have folks that create income and wealth to feel safe and not feel like the government's coming after them. And I know when people are building their business and exposing their investment to losing it all, take a little bit of their money, invest it, and hope for a solid return, that they don't have a friend right now in Washington. And so that's why I believe that Mitt Romney is a person that understands the economy, one of the first ones. He's not a former CIA director like George H.W. He's not an actor. He's a person that really, truly understands the economy. We've not had that, and I can't think of more appropriate time in our nation's history that we need it than right now.
Roy?
Well, I mean, when Barack Obama became president of the United States, the American economy was headed over the cliff. And, he had the good sense to hit the brakes and keep it from going over the cliff. What Mitt Romney wants to do is hop back behind the wheel and hit the gas and take it right back over the cliff. He's got his strategy is essentially to take the country back to the same policies that got us into the devastating economic position we're in now. When you ask him what he would do, he says, I'd sprinkle magic Romney dust all over everything and it'll just magically be better. I think the American people is smart enough to know better than that. They know that he's come forward with no new ideas. And in fact, those ideas that and he's said mostly, I'll tell you after the election exactly what I'd do. That's not a very satisfying basis upon which to entrust the future of the country. And I think voters are going to respond to that lack of clarity from him. Certainly voters wish that Obama had been able to improve things faster than he's been able to do so. That's different than blaming him for the fact that they haven't improved faster.
Well, why haven't the American people then, Roy, given him more credit just for what you said? He says he kept the country from going off a financial cliff. You're saying it here today, too. And yet, when it comes to how voters feel about which guy would handle the economy better, the president isn't scoring all that well. Why?
Well, in part, they've got the classic dilemma of the biggest fault I have with the Obama administration is I think they've done an incredibly bad job of telling their own story. They have not presented the case to the American people as effectively as I believe they could have. But the tension at the center of that problem is a critical one, and that is the people who decide elections are not deeply engrossed in every detail of the political back and forth, and they want to hear what you're going to do for them. And so the more the time that President Obama spends talking about what got us to this place, the more it sounds like he's talking about himself and not them. And so it's a fine line to walk as an incumbent, to split the time you're spending talking about the context of why we find ourselves where we do versus the amount of time you spend talking about what it is we're going to be doing going forward.
Jeff?
I believe that voters, when they go vote, have a mental flip card that they kind of process when they walk in to vote. And I think that each candidate, I could say names and things would pop to you. Goldwater, Hillary Clinton, I could do it all day, and different one or two things would pop up to you. When I say the name Barack Obama, I suppose that fixing the economy isn't on the flip card. He's got health care. He's got some good things, ending wars, don't ask, don't tell. I mean, there's all kinds of things that will be on there, but getting the economy going again is not on his flip card. He did not spend any time in his first 2 years when he had supermajorities in both the House and Senate working on the economy. They worked on health care. They worked on domestic issues, and they didn't focus on it. And when they finally turned their – and by comparison, Mitt Romney does have that on his card. You might disagree with how he would do so, but you think a business guy who knows how to build and create jobs.
In China.
And you can attack that for sure, but that is the narrative. And so the top line narrative of Obama is growing government, and even his successes are built in growing government. And Romney's about creating jobs, and people are voting on jobs in the economy, and that's why Obama doesn't get the credit, because he hasn't made a play to take credit for what's happened until the campaign started. And he was already defined as a candidate by then.
Gabby emails us this question at uptodate@kcur.org. Can each of your guests say how long they think it will take on election night for a winner to be declared? Am I going to need to take off the next day because I'll be up all night watching the results? And Gabby also wants to know, how much will the storm on the East Coast affect this election? Jeff Rowe, take the first question first on how long it's going to take on election night for us to figure out who's won this thing.
Well, we'll know pretty early the direction. I mean, Florida is a great indicator, and there's two time zones in Florida, so you've got to be a little bit cautious there. But the panhandle typically votes Republican. So if Romney comes out of Florida, if Florida early is too close to call, then it will probably be a long night, and you better call in sick. If Romney wins, as most analysts say that he will win, then I think you look to Wisconsin. And if Romney wins Wisconsin, if he wins Florida and Wisconsin, those are kind of the barometers. If he wins Wisconsin, you can go to bed and Romney's your president. If he loses Wisconsin, then you're going to have to stay up for Nevada. And Nevada is going to be late, 2 hours behind. And then you've got one county where 50% of the votes in one county, Clark County, and it's going to be a really late night. So I think that's probably the measurements. Ohio's important. There's a lot of states important. But the firewall for Obama is Wisconsin and Nevada. And if Wisconsin goes, Nevada's going to be close, and that could really be the state that decides it. Colorado's an extra hour behind us. That'll be close if those are close. And so, but likely this will have been decided. If Romney's to win, he will have won it by Wisconsin. If he's going to lose, then it'll probably take to Nevada.
Roy?
Well, I mean, I think it could be a late night for any number of reasons, because one thing that watching elections teaches you is they don't always go exactly as you might expect they will. So the one thing I can say with confidence is that there will be something that will surprise us about election day or election night or something of that sort. So, I think some people might be curious how Ohio turns out too, but, you know, there are different people watch for different indicators. But as to the part of the question about how the storm will impact the outcome of the election, I guess, you know, Virginia is that's the most competitive state where there's any weather implication, I think. But it doesn't, at least right now, seem like it's likely to have dramatic impact. But I guess if you got some kind of weird power situation where you had millions without power, you could have an unexpected problem. But I think people are amazingly flexible and adapt to a pretty extraordinary thing. So I suspect that they will do so in the case of this election, and things will go off as well as can be expected given the circumstances.
Well, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our good conversation here at the Kansas City, Missouri Public Library on the Plaza. Again, we're visiting with two prominent political consultants, Jeff Rowe for the Republicans, Roy Temple for the Democrats. In our second half today, we'll turn to the U.S. Senate race in Missouri. That's the race between Claire McCaskill and Todd Akin, and the race for governor, Jay Nixon against Dave Spence. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. And welcome back. I'm Steve Kraske. If you missed yesterday's conversation about Halloween and the occult, you'll find it in all of our older broadcasts at kcur.org. Tomorrow on the show, Time magazine writer and Kansas Cityan David Von Draley talks with us about Abraham Lincoln and America's most perilous year. That was the year 1862. This hour, we're coming to you live from the Kansas City, Missouri Public Library on the Plaza. We're visiting with Jeff Rowe and Roy Temple, two prominent political consultants here in Missouri, about the 2012 elections and all things going on in Missouri. Lots of folks lined up at our microphone here to ask a question or two. Ma'am, go ahead and fire away with a question if you would. Yeah. Go ahead.
I dropped her.
She's coming right up here to the microphone now. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you. This is a question. I would like to know whether it be the same discourse around the health care, the Economic Stimulus Act, Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and other legislations, if a Republican administration had passed such legislation.
Yeah, go ahead.
I don't believe so. I don't believe a Republican administration would probably pass most of that. And the Republicans, for the most part, particularly in these times, are focused on Republicans. There's two kind of walls of the Republican Party. There's the economic wall and the social wall. And there's those folks that get elected and care about social issues predominantly. And then there are those that care about economic issues predominantly. So our solutions would be come out of a very different bag than the bag that the Democrats use.
All right. Sir, go ahead.
Hi. We're coming to the end of another campaign with very little serious discussion of the issues. There's lots of attack ads, and the debates are a little more than an exchange of sound bites. The media seems to focus mostly on polls and who's raised the most money and which states are likely to go each way. And I'd just like to ask each of the three of you, the two of you as political consultants and you, Steve, as a journalist, if there isn't something you could do or something that someone could do to, we've got serious problems. Couldn't we have a serious discussion of the various proposals for addressing them?
I'll take it first. I believe voters, and this is no offense, by the way, we don't know each other, but voters get the campaigns they want. And they used to have at McDonald's, they used to have, you could order by four numbers, at one through four, then you had to kind of pick off the menu after that. Now they have 17, one through 17. You don't even have to stay in line at McDonald's anymore for food as you select your number. So people want it short, they want it tight. But at the same time, in a presidential campaign, I've never met President Obama. I've met Mitt Romney a few times. But I believe candidates, because of the exposure that the media gives them, I believe we have a pretty good sense of who we're electing. I think that the debates have been, really spectacular from the standpoint that we got to see both candidates both do well, by the way. I think that President Obama probably did best in the second debate of the three. But we got to see them live interact, and you know, I think we're pretty fortunate to still have that. All the networks carried them. They even carried a little bit more of the conventions this year. So I think that we've had a pretty big debate. I believe that the Medicare and all those fights that we typically have, the scare tactics, have actually been lessened this year. I believe it's more about jobs and economy. But I believe voters get the campaigns they want. And if they want, I mean, if you watch the news tonight, you're going to see murders and car wrecks and fires at the beginning, and that's what we compete against. So we try and get people's attention, and when voters change their opinion on what kind of campaigns they want, then the campaigns will change.
I guess I would play off what Jeff said, but say it slightly different. I wouldn't say that voters get the campaigns they want. I say voters get the campaigns they'll tolerate. And the fact of the matter is, until there is some sort of uprising among the electorate in which they demand that certain issues get discussed more substantively and more seriously, and then campaigns will continue to present them with information in the form that they currently do. I every 2 years since I've been involved in politics, that's basically since 1986, I will get at least one call from a journalist who will call me and is writing their annual, "Isn't this the most negative and bitter campaign ever, and why are there so many negative ad story?" Mm-hmm. It's in the book. You're required to do it if you're a journalist, I suppose. And what I say every time is, you will continue to see them as long as they work. Mm-hmm. When they stop working, politicians will stop spending money on them. And the reason they work is, I mean, I've sat through the focus groups. Jeff sat through the focus groups. People sit there and say, "Oh, these negative ads are awful. I hate them. I hate them. I hate them." You measure their opinion at the beginning. You show them the negative information. You measure their opinion at the end. And they go, "I'd never vote for that lousy guy." They react to the information. And you can give them a laundry list of positive reasons to be for someone. They can't recall a one of them. You give them one negative piece of information about somebody, they can never forget it. I'm not saying that's the way the world ought to be, but I'm saying as long as that's the way the world is, you're likely to continue to get that kind of information. So there has to be some kind of civic mechanism outside political campaigns that campaigns are forced to respond to if you want to create a dynamic that's likely to produce a different kind of dialogue.
And I grow concerned as the years pass about newspapers' ability to be that watchdog, you know, with the way the industry is going. But I hope you've noticed, at least at our newspaper, what we've done this fall is we've built our coverage sort of around three major set pieces. You know, Dave Helling and I, first one was Social Security and Medicare, very long pieces explaining those issues. I did struggled for days with a story on the fiscal cliff coming up in January and what that is, what it means, what the solutions are, what are the areas of compromise there. And then Dave came back on Sunday with one other piece on taxes and what where the two candidates are there. So I guess my argument would be that we try to provide a little bit of both, sort of the serious dialogue that folks like you are requesting, as well as a sense of where the races are, sort of the political dynamics on the other side of the coin. I don't see as much of that going on TV and elsewhere as I think we need to have, but that's the state of affairs today in many ways, I think. So,
if I could just add briefly, I am a Star subscriber, and I agree. I think you and Dave have done an excellent job.
Well, you can keep coming back to these shows as often as you want. Yeah, thank you for coming. Yeah. You know, speaking of that, the fiscal cliff, I'm just wondering, what are the prospects that this election will end or at least put a serious crimp in sort of gridlock in Congress that has been so dominant in recent years, especially when it comes to dealing with the deficit and taxes? What are the two you think? Where are we going here? Is this election going to give us a direction or not?
Look, there is nothing which politicians are worse at than interpreting the outcomes of elections. I mean, whoever wins thinks that everybody voted and agreed with every utterance that they made over the course of the campaign, and they think that the voters thereby rejected every utterance of the other side. I'm not terribly hopeful that the outcome of this election will do much to change the dialogue. In my view, until politicians pay a penalty, until they are penalized for being unreasonable by the electorate, then you will not see a shift, because there is no disincentive for being the most outrageous person at the bargaining table right now. And that's terrible for democracy, but I always operate under the assumption that people are going to act based on their perceived self-interest. And right now, there is no penalty for positioning, so that you are positioning well for the next election and doing virtually nothing to try and actually solve the problem. There's no price to be paid for that right now. The system is failing in that regard, in my view.
I agree with most of that. The one caveat would be that if Romney's elected and we're going to keep the House and we get the Senate, I think there'll be a lot of agreement in Washington, D.C.
Elaine in Kansas City, Missouri emails us this. Under Obama, my 401k is double what it was 4 years ago. My house is gaining value every day, and everyone I know is now employed at good jobs. Why aren't we talking about that? All the Obama supporters I know are very enthusiastic. Roy, you've responded to some of that already.
There's a television camera on the way to her house to put her on the air.
Yeah. Michael writes us this, even in the presidential election, I think the Todd Akin fiasco has had an impact. I've not yet talked with anyone who admits they will vote for Todd Akin. How can he be so close in the polls? Jeff Rowe, you think he's close in the polls. Why is he?
I do think he is. I think there's a chance that he could win. I believe that our country is remarkably divided. And I believe when you have a president, we did a little bit of research before we came in. In the last 30 years, there have been three presidential campaigns where the winner won by more than 7 points. If a presidential nominee wins Missouri by more than 7 points, 88% of the time, their same candidate wins that race. So when Clinton won by seven, all but one Democrat won. In 1984, when Reagan won, every Republican except for one won that election. So it's a wave. I agree with Roy in the fact that they'll move around the ballot, but Jay Nixon in a presidential year like this year is not going to win by that many points. He's not. It's going to be a very close race, in fact. And every piece of data I see shows it's tightening, and Akin shows. And so when you have a movement election in a state, regardless of how it plays out nationally, you can't have a president at the top of your ticket winning by 14 points and not have a swell of support for the entire ticket. That doesn't mean a Democrat can't win. It just means they're going to have to stand against a real heavy storm. And there's only a few campaigns, Democrat campaigns in Missouri, that can do that. There are only three that I think have any shot at winning if that momentum continues, and that would be Claire, because she spent tens of millions of dollars, you know, on her own campaign and has Akin that has helped her with that. Jay Nixon, who's an incumbent governor, has a record to run on, has raised $15 million. And Chris Koster, to a certain extent, he's raised about $4 million, and he can stand outside the storm. But in a movement election, people that Judy Moriarty won in 1992, won by about 25,000 votes. I mean, people that probably shouldn't get elected in wave elections.
And yet, Roy Temple, and yet you have this situation in Missouri where you had no less a personage than the Republican nominee for president asking that Todd Akin get out of the race in Missouri. The Missouri's Senator, Roy Blunt, a Republican, said to Todd Akin, get out of the race for the U.S. Senate. How could it possibly be a close race given all that?
Well, first, I'd be remiss if I didn't point out that those were not statements of principle. Those were statements of convenience. When they thought they saw an opportunity to get rid of what they viewed as a dog candidate, to use the inflammatory rhetoric of Todd Akin and refer to Senate candidates as dogs.
I was going to say that rings a bell.
You know, they saw an opportunity. They tried to seize it. They did not understand that, unlike many of the Republican candidates who say some of this stuff for political convenience, Todd Akin actually means it. And so he didn't respond to the political pressure from them. At one level, it is truly remarkable that he is even achieving the levels of support that he is. I concede that point. But to me, the floor should be much lower than it is. That's different than saying that I think he's competitive in the race. He's not. He's a zombie. He's dead and doesn't know it politically.
Mm-hmm. Jeff Rowe, you've been pretty outspoken about why someone like Todd Akin is competitive in a race like this. And you've said it has to do with where Claire McCaskill stands with Missouri voters these days and where she stood entering this race, which was where?
These two folks politically were hurtling through the political universe and just found each other. They found the only people in the other party that they could actually beat. And that's what we have. And so it's a bit of a race to the bottom. Claire McCaskill's she had a great brand going into U.S. Senate. She had taken on her own party and defeated a governor in a primary, only time in Missouri politics that ever happened. She had a brand as an auditor and a prosecutor. She had a real brand, and she went to Washington, D.C., and completely became lockstep with the president. And that's great when the president was winning Missouri, but bad when he's losing Missouri. And she had her plane problems and all those type of things, and her brand just got damaged. And with independent, undecided voters, her unfave was 20 to 60. I mean, she couldn't beat anybody, and she still may not be able to beat anybody. But the only person she for sure can beat would be Todd Akin. That's the only person, any other name. And that's because of her brand more than his. Now, he has a problem, too, and so she is probably the only person politically that he can beat. And that's why I think we're going to see a close race. And I also think we'll have a Libertarian that probably gets more votes than ever in the history of Missouri politics. The Libertarian will probably get north of 5%. And it'll be one of the first times. But I believe that Todd Akin is in this race, and it's more to do with Claire McCaskill than it is to do with Todd Akin.
Go ahead, Roy.
Well, that's just elections for you. I've said to candidates before, you cannot win this election if you're the most hated person in the state of Missouri, or pick your state. But you can win election if you are the second most hated person in the state. That's not a favorable commentary on our political system, but that's the one we got. There are two names. As long as there are two names on the ballot, you can be the least offensive choice. And I think that's an interesting discussion for another day, is when are Republicans going to learn the lesson of that you can give away, you can snatch defeat from the jaws of victory based on who you nominate. They've done it with Todd Akin. They did it with the Harry Reid seat last time in Nevada. There are other examples this time. And there's a real lesson in that, I think, that they won't be able to draw upon until after they've lost this one, which they will.
That's the voice of Roy Temple. He's a Democratic political consultant in Missouri. He's joined by Jeff Rowe, who's with the Republicans, as we come to you live this morning from the Kansas City, Missouri Public Library and the Country Club Plaza. Would the two of you just make a brief case for each of these two candidates, why voters should consider Todd Akin, Jeff Rowe, why they should consider voting for Claire McCaskill, Roy Temple? Jeff, let me begin with you with Todd Akin.
I started with Sarah Steelman in the race, and so Todd is my newfound choice since August. I believe that the majority party matters. I believe if Harry Reid is the Senate Majority Leader in Washington, that we have a fundamental different course for the country. And so I believe that the Republicans have a real play at getting 51 seats. And if we want to repeal Obamacare, we want to make fundamental changes to what the president's agenda has done to the country, then you have to have a Senate that works in lockstep. And Todd Akin is a consistent conservative choice. He will have he will vote right on issues, and he will care. He will spend more time working with the majority party than Claire McCaskill will.
Roy Temple for Senator Claire McCaskill.
Well, real quickly, let me just say out of the box that Todd Akin is a truly remarkable figure in politics because he's done something I never thought would happen. He's made me actually feel sympathy for Jeff trying to articulate the case for him. And I never would have thought that would be an emotion I would feel about something political. Look, the reality is Senator McCaskill has gone to Washington and she's done consistently the job she thought that was best for Missouri families. She's 50th ranked in ideology in the Senate. She's middle of the road, which is what Missouri is. Missouri swings both ways in outcomes, but it's essentially a centrist state. They want common sense solutions. They want people who understand what it's like to live a normal life, middle class life, trying to figure out how to put your kids through college, how to exist on a minimum wage job. And you've got her opponent who is out of the mainstream in every way conceivable, from social issues to wanting to provide earmarks to campaign contributors, to wanting to eliminate the child nutrition programs, to eliminate student loan programs to assist middle-class families who want to help send their kids to college. So she's done an extraordinary job of looking out for average Missouri families. She would continue to do so, and she's running against someone who can't see the mainstream from the extreme positions in which he stands. So I think that's the case.
Mike from Overland Park writes us this: do you or your guests think that we'll ever go to voting at a polling place over a weekend period of time instead of the first Tuesday in November for presidential elections like they do in Kansas, he adds. Are we ever going to see advanced voting in Missouri?
I think early voting will probably come. In most places, Republicans are scared of it originally, you know, at the onset, but then understand how the process works. What it does, it's a lot longer campaign season when you have early voting. I've got a campaign right now in Arizona, and half the votes will be cast by Election Day. And so we went up on TV in September instead of waiting until October. So it changes the political. So be careful, voters, what you want, what you ask for, because you're going to get it. And if you do early voting, then you'll have a lot longer campaign. You'll have a lot longer negative campaign because you have to reach those voters early with the contrast messages.
Early voting, Roy, are you holding your breath?
No, I think it's very difficult. It's been a challenge to even make it easier to expand opportunities for absentee balloting. In many states, that's a very convenient thing for people to do. Here, you've got a candidate for Secretary of State on the Republican side who wants to make it virtually impossible for people to cast absentee ballots. So I think there, as long as Republicans see political advantage in trying to make the voting difficult for certain populations, I think we won't see much progress in this way. I think what it should be about, however, is making it convenient for voters rather than convenient for the politicians. And so in that end, I think we should be moving toward early vote and other mechanisms to make it easier. But I don't have a lot of hope about that.
Jennifer emails us this: I haven't heard either panelists address where women are in this election. Obama has a big lead among female voters. Please tell me my gender can sink Mitt Romney.
Well, Mitt Romney has a big lead among male voters. We don't hear a lot about that.
Right. It's the flip side of the coin, right?
Married women, Romney has a healthy lead. One of the largest leads of a Republican nominee for president. So the real dichotomy in the female vote is between married women and unmarried. And unmarried women are part of the Democrat base. They perform, you know, we talk about these things, you know, the guy that doesn't know anybody that doesn't have a job and the Obama supporter where everybody's doing great. We live in parallel universes. We don't go to the same restaurants. We don't watch the same TV shows. We don't watch the same TV channels. I mean, we are a split country. You know, 71% of people that live in a cul-de-sac are Republican. So we live in different places. We shop at different stores. We watch different movies. And we pay attention to different TV shows. If I want to buy independent women, I buy news stations I didn't even know were on the channel. And so it's a dichotomy. Unmarried women are part of that Democrat base that Republicans don't talk to very well or very often. But married women, which is a key component of a swing vote, particularly over 55, that's an area that Romney's win, and that's one of the closest margins in the gender gap that we've ever seen.
Well, I think it's very easy to use the shorthand of punditry and talk about women and men and all that stuff, but it's these are not monolithic groups. I mean, just to draw an example from what Jeff was just saying, that, you know, married and unmarried seems like it includes everyone, but unmarried can be sliced and diced lots of different ways. There's a big difference in the concerns and perspectives of a woman who's unmarried because she's 75 and widowed than there is an unmarried 19-year-old young woman who's starting her college career. They have some issues of interest and in common, but they are very different perspectives. I think that we have a better case as Democrats to make to women across a broad spectrum, that broad spectrum of women voters, because frankly, women voters are just much more highly pragmatic. They're on average less ideological, less persuaded by the heated rhetoric and nonsense that Jeff and I will present to you too much today, and much more focused in on what is going to happen that is going to benefit my life or make it just a little bit easier because it's pretty tough. Whether you're married in the suburbs, single in the urban core, in college, a widow living in any geographic place, you've got real challenges in your life and you're trying to figure out how these candidates' perspectives might make a meaningful difference. And they tend to focus in on that at a much more practical level and be less caught up in the slick rhetoric, I think.
We've hardly touched on the Missouri race for governor. It hasn't gotten a whole lot of attention between Democrat Jay Nixon going for a second term, businessman John Bruner. Why not? Why haven't we heard more about this race, Roy Temple?
Well, first of all, the candidate's Dave Spence, not to be sarcastic, Steve, but I think that tells you a little bit. It's easy to slip up because Spence has just, frankly, never gotten any traction.
Yeah.
He's never been able to present a plausible case for why voters should replace Jay Nixon as governor. Nixon's taken tough times and done a good job with the state. I think voters sense that, and Spence has not found a way to dislodge that notion.
We're going to have to leave it there. I want to thank Jeff Rowe, who's a founder and principal of Axiom Strategies, Roy Temple, a veteran Democratic political consultant. Gentlemen, thanks so much for your time today. So good to have you here. Our thanks to you, our audience here on site at the Kansas City Public Library on the Plaza, and a special thanks to the staff of the library for making today's broadcast possible. You can find more information about our program at kcur.org. Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date. Tomorrow, Time magazine writer David Von Draley talks with us about Abraham Lincoln and America's most perilous year. Today's show is produced by Steven Steigman, Chris Pruitt, and Beth Lipoff. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you are up to date.